welcome to another episode of Pinellas County School's Tales from the Tech Side. I am your host, James Wilson. And in this episode, we want to talk about something that's really popular in ed tech right now, which is AI. And with me, I have some guests who are going to talk about how AI is affecting secondary English language arts education, whether it's good, it's bad, or indifferent. And so I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves. We'll start off with Maxine Nicholas.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Maxine Nicholas, and I'm a staff developer for ELA and reading at the secondary level.
Thank you, Maxine, for joining us. A returning guest that you guys have met before, Bronwyn Slack.
Yes, I'm Bronwyn Slack. I'm the program coordinator for library media for Pinellas County Schools.
And first time podcast participant, Britt Mosley.
Hi, I'm Britt Mosley, and I am the high school ELA and reading specialist for Pinellas County Schools. I'm so excited to be here.
Okay. So again, thank you, ladies. Excuse me. Thank you, ladies, for being here. I recently went to FETC, which is the Future of Educational Technology Conference. And one of the big things, like every session, somebody was doing something talking about AI. And in some of the sessions, it varied about, you know, they were exclaiming the great things that AI was bringing to education and how there's no way to avoid it. One of the things that stuck with me is they compared AI in ELA to calculators in math.
Yeah.
Right? They're saying that, you know, before math teachers, which I'm a former high school math teacher, was really resistant, reluctant, thinking that the insertion of calculators into the math classroom was going to really just be a disruptor, change everything. And today, you can't really teach math without the kids having a calculator.
Yeah.
And so with that, I want to talk about some of the traditional technology that we see in the ELA classroom. So what are teachers using or have been using over the past few years when we talk about technology in the ELA classroom, especially secondary?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind for me, the equivalent of the calculator for math, is something like Word, spell check, or Grammarly as a website that students will run papers through and writing through to make sure that their grammar is correct, or even like Citation Machine. But in ELA in general, I think technology, what a calculator might have done in a math classroom and what a spell check does in English are very different. It's still just the former technology was still just little patches. You could never do the complete product. There was still plenty that an English teacher could know or teach you without that totally ruining their classroom.
Okay. Any other?
I mean, when I thought about it, I thought about the technology that the programs we use to ask students to submit work through. So we ask them no longer like just writing on paper and pencil, but like now typing that, uploading that, and then even having, like with WriteScore, having someone score that for you and then give you and your teacher feedback, or, you know, accessing text or submitting your quiz responses. That's kind of what I, you know, have seen with technology for English.
Okay. And so, and again, I was a math teacher, but when I think about traditional technology in the ELA classroom, that's what I think about. I think about word processing and then access to digital resources. So no longer do kids actually have to have a physical like book, read this novel.
Yeah. Right.
They have it digitally.
Yes.
And so just more access, more resources, but not as what AI is potentially have the ability to do, which is be a game changer.
Right.
Yes.
And so you alluded to it a little bit, Britt, when you said that those things didn't do the work for the kids. Mm-hmm. The teacher was still critical and instrumental in teaching the kids the process. Well, now we all know the potential impact of AI, yeah. where a student can just put in a prompt and say, can you write a 3-paragraph summary of the Diary of Anne Frank? Mm-hmm. And then out comes this 3-paragraph summary. Is that good, bad, or thoughts?
I think one of the big questions we'll have to consider is just sort of the ethical use, because I do think AI can augment how students learn, whether it's a parallel way to, you know, understand the content that maybe they learned during the day, but they don't have access to support or resources at home that kind of reinforces whatever they are that's learning. And I know that ChatGPT in general, or OpenAI rather, had said that that was sort of a vision that they had, that this could be a tool that people could use to learn parallel to whether it's something that they're researching in their career or if it's something that they're researching in college or in school, that it could be sort of that augmentation of their learning. But I think we eventually do have to talk about sort of the ethical use, because there are instances where we don't allow students to use calculators. So, you know, I think there would be, you know, appropriate times and inappropriate times. And I think that's sort of what we have to, where we have to guide our students and our kind of how to navigate that and then eventually make those choices for themselves when they're outside of K-12 education.
And I think that it's going to be an evolving question, right? Mm-hmm. What the ethical use is based on how very smart this AI eventually gets. It's pretty smart now from some of the things I looked at and read, but where it is ultimately, and not even just could go, where it's already on the precipice of going, and how that will affect the way teachers see instruction and the way we measure growth with students is probably at the precipice of massive change, seismic shift, like poles switching, not just a little bit, but pole switching, which causes things like ice ages. So we're coming up on our ice age in education.
I mean, understanding that is what is already out there with technology, it just makes me want to get to better teaching. Because when you have conversations with your students around whatever prompt or task that you've given them and they produce something that is not at the same caliber of what you would expect from them, it is then allowing you and that student to go deeper into, you know, you can cipher through, did you really create that? You know, is that your real thought process? You get more reflective, basically deeper knowledge with that student if you know that's something they could use. Now you're having intentional conversations and scaffolds built in place to counteract that so that they get what they need. So when they take the assessment and they don't have those features, they still are successful.
Yeah, I wonder how long they're not going to have those features, just mm-hmm. as a comparison, mm-hmm. right? We know for a long time we've had translators, mm-hmm. and we have kids who are ESOL kids, mm-hmm. and we're trying to measure how well in our discipline, right, how well they can read a text to find things like themes and moods and tones and purposes. But we're still fighting the barrier of them knowing the language and that being a mask for what they really know and what they don't know. So although the technology is there and easy to infuse into any assessment, I could easily give a kid the assessment on the computer, the adaptive assessment on the computer in their own language in 2 seconds. And then see if they can answer those mm-hmm. ELA questions.
That's a good part of it.
Right? Mm-hmm. But so our systems haven't caught up to the technology. The technology is growing much faster than our systems have caught up. And then is that really fair? After this child takes the measurement and they have a language barrier but not a cognitive thinking barrier, it seems like we just need to fix that. It just needs to be fixed yesterday. And then now we have to think about, I think the big question we have to start asking ourselves is, what is the goal of education, mm-hmm. right? And my answer to that is to prepare kids to live and work in the world that they live and work in, not the world of the Victorian era or the Renaissance era, right? The world that they live and work in. So once AI has developed to this point, we have to know that this feature is available and it is probably never not going to be available aside from some sort of apocalypse, which you can't prepare for an apocalypse, so don't try. But the point is, how we as teachers have to understand, or we as educators should really start to think in terms of what are the tools that the kids need to be successful in their world, and how do I help them navigate those tools, get comfortable with those tools, and teach them the things that the AI still can't do or can't teach them, really know what the major things are to measure versus the minor things.
When you brought up citation generators, they've been around for a long, 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 long time. And same thing with calculators. A lot of it, what I think is missing here too, is, you know, I think some people want to say, oh no, the sky is falling. We're not going to be able to test students the way we've been testing them. We'll never get an original essay out of a student ever again. But I think what we forget is that part of either of those tools, whether we're talking about the calculator or an AI technology, a human still has to enter in some kind of input.
Yep.
And that input might be incorrect. So for citation generators, that was my favorite thing whenever I would teach students at the middle school level research. They're like, oh, well, you know, there's night sight out there. There are these others that are out there. And I'm like, great, you go ahead and do that. And then show me the citation that you get for this material. And they would bring it back in, and I would notice that they would maybe transpose like the first name and the last name of the author. And it's like, you know, you have to put it in correctly in order to get what you really wanted out correctly. So
yeah,
I think that's the other part too, is, you know, we might be the teachers of the input, and then at, you know, then at a certain point they might just start relying on those tools as because it's easier, or
well, they're more efficient
for, and eventually they could be more accurate with it. But I'm curious, like, the behavior behind it. So if you're choosing to go and use something like AI to answer, you know, give me a 3-paragraph summary of XYZ text, that would be my first question, is why did you feel like you needed to do that? Because that would tell me as an educator that something was missing, that they didn't have the ability, the confidence, the resiliency, you know, anything to come up with their own thoughts or their own analysis. And I know our students struggle with analyzing. And so, you know, I think that's really, you know, it's maybe just something that is showing us that that still is an issue. And they might, you know, seek another source, like give them some ideas of what might be the correct thing to say. But I think then we have to ask, like, why do you feel like you needed to do that? You know, do I not give you enough opportunities to rewrite your thoughts or express yourself? So
it makes me wonder if we're going to start hearing in the secondary ELA classrooms what we've been hearing in secondary math classrooms for years, which is, why do I need to learn how to do this when they are calculators that will do it? But Bronwyn, you did say something that also was very key and very important, is if you put in bad input, you get out bad output. So just because you have a tool and the tool can give you an answer, is it really the correct answer? And I think the biggest thing is, does a student have the ability or the knowledge to assess that their answer is incorrect and is way incorrect, right? Do they even have an idea of what it should be or what it should look like from the very beginning or from the very start? Can I estimate or sort of predict? That way I can evaluate the output I'm getting from, whether it's an AI or a calculator. And so those are some things that went through my mind as you guys were talking. But again, and so I wonder, you know, because if I'm the student and I have no plans of ever, ever, ever writing a 3-paragraph or a 5-paragraph or a short story or a novel in my life, once I'm out of school, why not use this tool, right? It will suffice for right now. It'll get me hopefully a passing grade, and then I can go on to what I really want to do.
Yeah, what a great point, and how important it is for us to think about that. Again, if the goal of education is to provide students the opportunity to master their 21st century success skills for jobs that they'll hold down. You know, does a nurse need to write a 5-page essay, probably for her exam or for some certification test. But aside from that, she doesn't. She needs to know how to put an IV in me effectively so I don't go home with a bruise that's, you know, as big as my arm. She doesn't need to write essays. What she does need, which I think is really interesting, and I'd say at this point, from everything I read, technology is not able to do that yet. The AI is not quite there. It's past the input problem in a lot of places. This ChatGPT specifically, in terms of writing, it doesn't just write summaries. It can write an analysis of, and it can write invoices, and it can grade its own essay. So it can take law exams. It's doing a lot of crazy things, but it is a hop, skip, and a jump from being really smart AI and not just crowdsourced information. Mm-hmm. But that goes to, I think it just goes back to the idea of, if I ask a child, and as a teacher in a classroom, I was doing it all the time already, where the kid would say, well, what does that mean? And I'd say, Google it. And then they'd say, well, how's that comparison? I'm sure you can find a TikTok on that, or I'm sure you could find a YouTube video where somebody explained that process to you. Every time I need to cook a new meal, and I want it to be really delicious, I find a YouTube video, right? I don't go to the old cookbook and look it up, or make a phone call to my mom. I use the available resources that I have. So I think that we have to see that. We have to see the ability for a chatbot to research all the resources on the World Wide Web and spit out for me a summary in 3 minutes is so helpful, as long as that is accurate information, compared to me going to this Google website, going to this website, and then synthesizing what is true. At this point, it can't necessarily give me what is true and what is not true, but that's around the corner. My mom, who she's got cancer right now, and so she's got a very rare form of cancer, and she asked ChatGPT to give her, tell me all about this cancer and tell me all about the common treatments and what are the you know, the consequences of doing those treatments, to help her make a decision about what she was going to do in terms of treatment. And in 3 minutes, she had the whole essay, which, you know, if you've ever worked with cancer doctors or any kind of really smart doctor, they often don't explain it to you in words that make any sense to you. But ChatGPT wrote her an essay that helped her make life decisions. And of course, that's awesome. And we're not going to say no to that. We want kids to know how to use it. So I think, back to your point, Bronwyn, we have to start to think about effective ways we can incorporate the most recent versions of the technology into our stratospheres as ELA and reading teachers. And I'm going to extend that to everybody, because writing an essay might seem like it's a secondary language art thing. And it may really seem like that to you, James, who is a math teacher, but the science teachers do this.
Right.
And so do the social studies teachers. And so do the art teachers, that this is a transferable skill. It's just a literacy skill. And, you know, a computer can do it pretty well right now. Soon it will be smart enough to get rid of what I call the trolls and the wrong information. And then that's when instead of getting C's on the bar exams that the ChatGPT is getting now, it's going to start getting A's. Right now, it just doesn't know this is right, this is wrong. It just knows this was said X percentage of the time, so it's probably right, and I'm going to put it in the essay. But when it gets smart enough to do that, it's not wrong. What do we do? How do we manage that?
That's unique, because one of the things that, while I was at this conference, that they kept saying was that outside of the educational sphere, right, the potential for AI is huge. You mentioned your mom and how it helped her gather all of this information that would have taken months or you know, to accumulate and to boil down the decision. It helped her gather all of that and then provide it in a succinct manner where she could easily understand and then make a conscious decision based on some information. So, you know, why is it that, and I call education the Titanic, right? Because we see the iceberg and it takes us 20 years to turn to avoid it. But by the time we turn, though, there's another
iceberg
you know, right there. We're always playing sort of catch up, right? When is it the opportunity for us to, as educators, say, let's embrace, let's move forward, because the world that we're preparing kids for do not exist. We can't continue to prepare them for a 20th century education in the 21st century.
Yep.
Well, I think there is sort of a counter movement to this. So, you know, we acknowledge it's out there, and it's actually been out there for much longer in other, you know, derivatives of what it's become now. Or maybe it wasn't as easy to access by the standard user of the internet. But I think there is sort of a pushback too, where it, you know, it's important to know the difference between something that a human mind created and something that was AI created. So I do think as humans, we will continue to crave, you know, what someone actually says to us and what someone actually writes themselves, because it then gets into the whole question of, you know, should you be given whatever this derivative of AI that you're using to give you this information? Is that now the author? Like, do you give them the creator rights, whatever them is or that they are? Is that now a creator that you would need to, you know, cite in a research paper, for example? And that's a question right now that there are, you know, pros and cons on both sides of allowing and disallowing. So I think there is going to be, you know, some type of pushback, but not necessarily saying that this shouldn't exist or can't exist, because frankly, it's like I said, it's been around longer than the last couple of months since it became on all of our radars. But I think there is going to be this still a human need for that human interaction that we still get from writing and from reading the works of an individual that you can go out and shake their hand and meet them at a conference or, you know, at a seminar. So I think we're going to have, I think it could be a healthy balance, because there seems to be enough on that other side too, that's asking, you know.
And maybe what you're getting at is the idea that there's still satisfaction in creating and inventing and adapting.
Having an original idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's still self-worth that can be built in that. And we don't want AI to take over so strongly that there isn't a need for people. Like, why do we exist, right?
Right.
So how do we tap into that in the hearts of our students as we start to work? How do we say we have this tool that we can use, but it's no matter, I've even seen AI where it'll say, draw a picture of, and the AI collects, and I don't know that it's drawing, but it creates some original piece of artwork that is for whatever the thing is, like, you know, the coming zombie apocalypse, make the picture, and you look at it and you're like, oh, totally. So maybe we say to kids, can you analyze the mood? Yes. Can you explain why the AI put this, and this into it? So we're still tapping into the what is necessary with a human at this point. And then we could ask the chatbot to write an essay on what elements were used to check, to verify that what the student said, right, actually is correct. So I think the potential is there. We just have to know, and we have to let kids know that we know it's there. We know it exists. We know what it can do at this point and what it can't do. We also know that it's going to get better, and eventually it's going to be able to do more, but it doesn't ever replace you. It doesn't ever replace your idea, and that's the most important thing to me. So those relationships that we build with students and that social emotional work that we do with them is really going to become so much more important.
It's totally off topic, but when you were talking about value, it made me think of a commercial that I've been seeing recently where there's lab-grown diamonds and there's earth-grown diamonds, right? So look very similar, right? One takes thousands of years to develop and build, right? Or create, and then the other one's done in a matter of weeks or months,
right?
Right, and they're still both very sparkly, and it's which one do we value, right?
Yeah.
The one that took this, you know, original creation, long time original thought versus we just threw a couple things together and bang, bang, boom, here we have this. I don't know why it made me think of that, but that it made me think
and
of
and
that.
Artificial diamonds, artificial intelligence. I mean, it's similar. I mean, like I said, there are going to be people that will be okay with both. And I think that's, you know, but we have to, that respect part where it's like, you know, if I, as an educator, I'm asking a student to create something solely using specific sources that I've given to them, plus their own analysis, like that's my expectation. My expectation was not to use something artificial to get to that from point A to point B. And part of that's because I need to know, you know, and I was kind of alluding to this before, but like where from A to B did I lose you in that educational process? Because I do think that even though, you know, the example of the nurse not needing to write a 5-paragraph essay every day, I think we surprise ourselves, and I said this in the last podcast, I think we surprise ourselves with how much literacy we do participate in, that it's informal literacy, you know, whether you're reading a menu at a restaurant that you want to eat at, or you're flipping through different things on social media, you're interpreting, you're reading, you're analyzing, you're making choices all the time. And I think it's important as educators that we understand, you know, that A to B, why did you make the choice to go the artificial route, you know, instead of the authentic route? So maybe that's, you know, we need to talk about authentic intelligence versus, you know, that artificial intelligence part.
I have a question for Maxine, specifically. My kids are out of school.
Okay.
Right? They're gone. So I wear my educator hat and my children learned how to do all these things. They are done. But you have young kids that are just starting to come up in education, the system. Put your parent hat on and maybe your parent and educator hat.
Okay.
And tell me how do you feel about this? And I know you weren't prepared for this, but I'm so eager to hear what you're thinking.
I don't know. I mean, how might my kids, I'm always about wielding the tool. How might they wield information to create a response to whatever task they're given? I don't know how readily they'll go and look for some type of engine to give them a thing. I'm hoping that I am, you know, raising them up to be deep thinkers. And so even if they gather this, you know, if I didn't know about a topic and I use this AI to get me my information like your mom did, are they then going to do the process of analyzing that information to come up with their own response? So I hope that is what everyone would do with information, is to think deeply about it, make connections, and then make decisions or responses based on that. That's what I hope I would have taught anyone to do.
And I'm in between because I have kids that are out. Okay. And then I have one left.
The son that's in.
And so I have a son that's still in. And I said it on an earlier podcast, you know, when they ask me about my expectations for them in math, and I tell them, well, math taught me how to problem solve. Right. So it's not necessarily that you need to retain all of the math that you're going to go through. It's those underlying things for math. Like I say, it's problem solving in ELA, how to analyze. Right. How can I summarize? Right. You don't need to, you know, that nurse doesn't have to give a dissertation to her patient. She has to summarize what the doctor has said and put it in a manner that the patient is comfortable with and can understand. So as a parent, you know, that's what I'm hoping that my kids are getting, in addition to what I do at home, from their teachers and from what they're doing in class. And for Bronwyn, who has even smaller, who's just starting, right?
Yeah.
Your child will probably get the AI that is coming, right? The one
he'll
that
get it
will
at
be...
home and at school. No, I'm kidding. I grew up with it. My mom was a school librarian, so I always felt like we were the first people in our neighborhood that had like the internet. Like we were the first ones that had like the old bag cell phones. Like we were early adopters. My mom was like way ahead of her time, and so I kind of see myself following in that with my son. I mean, I am one of those people where balance, I try to strive for balance in all things. And I would rather, to your point, Maxine, I'd rather tell him, yes, this is out there, but let's talk about when is a good time to use it.
Right.
Because that's a lot of parenting in general. Like, it's not okay to act like this right now, but at home you can do that, you know, or whatever, like, you know. So we're already doing that with our kids. It's just another thing that we get to add to that really long, ever-growing list of things now as parents in the in this day and age that we have to navigate with our children. Now parenting has not gotten any easier for sure.
Yeah. And I was just thinking the job that I had before this, when I was the Elevating Excellence Coordinator, and I had to learn all about, you know, multiple pathways after graduation and all the different jobs kids have. Tech is one of the fastest growing jobs and is one of the leading jobs. And my daughter and I used to talk a lot about, cause she worked at USF at FCAN, which is an organization that kind of helped with job placement, that kind of work too for the state. But one of the things we would always talk about is, if I'm an employee looking to hire somebody, they're realizing now with the tech people that when they interview them, they don't have personal skills. And so sometimes they become very difficult to work with in the workplace because they don't know how to compromise, because they don't know how to look somebody in the eye or explain the thing. Some of these very brilliant people don't know how to explain it. So I think it goes both ways. One, most of our jobs are probably in tech industry and ways that we're going to improve things. And most of the weaknesses are relationship building. So you know, the schoolhouse, we talk about the massive changes that have happened in education. And I'm going to say we still haven't caught up. When I did all my master's degree research to learn all about Dewey and all the early educators, we learned that in America, we created a one room schoolhouse. And why do we have summer? Because that was harvest season. Why do we have spring break? Because, man, we were farmers and that's what we did. And here we are, like you said, right? We've had lots of years to look at the iceberg and we still have those breaks and we're not farmers. We're not all farmers anymore. We don't need the kids to help, you know, pull the corn out of the backyard or pick the oranges off the trees anymore. So the more we can really think about the structures of our systems and how they will effectively produce, you know, two things: great workers in workplaces that can make work faster, more efficient, and easier, so that we have a lot more time to play, right? That's what I really want.
I know. So, when do we get that?
Yeah, exactly, right? And think about it. If you had to produce a document for your boss and could go to ChatGPT and produce it in 3 minutes versus the seven
boss,
hours.
If you're listening, I don't do that.
No, she totally doesn't. But, and nor do I, FYI.
You pay for ChatGPT now.
And some of the reason is because it's not available to us. But if it was going to be accurate and perfect, and we have to, why not? Why? We would totally use it, because life is about working to make fun and life better. So if these technological things make it so that I only have to work, you know, 30 hours a week and that's full time, or 20 hours a week and that's full time, because the AI can do a lot of the other things and I can still get paid the money I get paid and get a lot more time with my children and with the things I love doing. Oh, sign me up.
Okay. So as we get ready to wrap, I want to ask you each to take a minute, think about the classroom teacher, the student, and the parent. When it comes to the potential utilization of AI, artificial intelligence, what would be your recommendations to each of those?
To each representative, like, what would I say to the parent, to the educator,
and to the student?
To the student.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay.
To a parent, I would say, know your child, know your industries, partner with us. Educators educate for core curricula and some electives, but you work in industries that we don't know because we don't work in them. We work in education. So be an advocate for your industry and your child. So give us the perspectives that we need to hear. To educators, be open-minded. Know, think about keeping the main thing, or the most important thing. So understand that, you know, education isn't like a golden statue that should stay as it is forever. It's not an antique that we should value for eternity. Education should be a evolving, growing, living system. And we need to maybe start thinking about treating it as such. And I forgot the last one, James.
For the students.
Oh, for students. Yeah. Again, that same concept of advocate for yourself. Engage. As much as we can help you understand that what your felt needs are when you're 12, when you're 13, when you're 14, when you're 18 are, they're going to be very different than when you're, you know, 30. So be willing to listen and learn from the grown-ups, both your parents and the teachers around you that can give you really good advice. Know that, you know, last level of myelination doesn't occur until you're 25. That's a brain thing. And so you are not done. You are still an uncooked thing when you are in high school and when you are in college. And understand and embrace that, and take the good from the people who are fully cooked.
I would say to the parent, have conversations with your kid about what they're learning and what's interesting to them, because the more they start talking about what they know and what they like, it's deepening their ability to analyze. So they won't need to go getting something that they already possess, and they can then just will that information towards whatever their original thoughts are. My daughter had a whole analysis of the way in which a building structure their little art design. And she says, oh, because they're ice cream shop, that means they're trying to say they're unique. So they had a unique artwork to represent who they are. And my mom's like, that's my grandchild. So it's just, <That's right. laughs> it's just, I mean, having those conversations where they even feel open to share what they're thinking. And so to the students, continue to maybe challenge your educators as to a way that you can show them, like, okay, miss, you want me to write this 5-paragraph essay, but what if I could show you that I understood what you were trying to say this way? So even challenge your educators on the way in which you might be able to showcase your knowledge to them, so that you don't have to go and get something artificial and serve it up to them because that's how they're looking for their meal today. And then for educators to be versatile in the way in which they see things. It doesn't always have to be the essay, maybe, or always. We talk about the law school, and they probably had that assessment for years. Yeah. So anybody, you know, with enough, you know, whatever, could mimic that or do well with it. Find innovative ways to get students, get your learners to showcase their knowledge, is what I would say.
I would say to parents, to piggyback off what I just said, I mean, there are a lot of digital tools out there. And if we aren't aware of them as parents, whether we're, you know, we make different devices available at home, or we don't have filters on our internet, like that's going to be just a constant thing. Chat, AI isn't the only issue there. Mm-hmm. But so I would say just continue to be vigilant with the media that your children consume and the digital resources that they access. Mm-hmm. We do have to keep talking with children about that. And part of it's to keep them safe, too. It's not even about an education piece, even. I would say to the educators, again, you know, if you're finding that your students are gravitating towards needing those types of sources to give you whatever it is you're asking for them, maybe reassess what you're asking them for. And maybe that's not the best way to assess them anymore, you know. And to students, I would say, keep being creative, keep making weird TikTok videos and, you know, be yourself, be original. That's not anything new. Because some of that will get lost if you only kind of, you know, rely on crowdsourced AI information from, you know, the internet of all things. And then it's kind of like, who are you? You know, so I think I like that when you said, you know, tap into who you are and what's important to you. Always ask yourself that, like, what's important to me now? Because what's important to my son at 8 is probably going to be way different when he's much older. So, and I try to ask him those questions. He doesn't lean towards that creative side. He leans more towards like that, wants to tell me every single fact about something. And so I have to kind of force him to do the creative thing. And I, and so, you know, I would say to students, just, you know, don't let the creative part of you go as you get older. Mm-hmm. Like, try to keep a hold on at least a little bit of that.
Well, thank you, ladies. This has been a great episode. Very informative. For our listeners, thank you for tuning in. And as always, remember to like, subscribe, and share. This has been another episode of Tales from the Tech Side. Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.